Welcome to Artists Mean Business. Today,
we're
improvising because today we're here with our resident artist, Andy Baker, who is a jazz musician, here for episode 23. And I'm excited to have this conversation because we don't know what's going to come up because it is in the spirit of jazz. So I'll just kick this off. Thank you for being here.
Sure.
So, you know, to go way back when, I like to always ask, did you know, was there a moment when you thought, I am an artist?
I wouldn't say so. No, in fact, not a specific moment.
I was already playing professionally before I went to college, and then, of course, still learning for many, many years, hopefully still now, out of college, and just, it was a natural flow. I know there was never a moment where I was like, that's it, I'm right.
Well, what about when you were like a kid, you know, and everybody was talking about, oh, I want to be an accountant. Okay, maybe they weren't saying that, but a lawyer, a doctor.
Yeah.
Did you say, I want to be a musician?
No. You know, I was talking about this morning with some students. It never occurred to me that I would ever be anything else.
Huh.
So, even before I was really playing, you know, when I was first, I was like, this is who I am, this is what I do, you know, as a 12 and 13 year old, and like, that's just always what I did all the time, what I wanted to do. And it wasn't really thinking, like, I'm an artist, I'm a jazz musician, or anything like that. It's like, I play the trombone, that's what I do.
So when people ask you, what do? You just say, I play the trombone?
Now?
Well, when you were in, you know, your younger years coming out of school, in school.
Yeah, I'm a trombone player.
Yeah. You owned it.
Well, it was really the only thing in my life.
So, well, that's sad.
No, it's great.
I'm just kidding. So, apart from being able to play musically, were there tools in your toolbox, so to speak, that enabled you to be successful? Things that, had you not known how to do, you wouldn't probably be where you are.
Sure. I mean, as a musician, when you're trying to get into making a living playing music, you have to earn the right to be a musician, to be an artist. You know, you have to pay a lot of dues, you have to play a lot of crummy gigs, and you have to play a lot of gigs that you probably wouldn't want to play a lot of music you don't want to play, and earn the right to do it. You have to develop a reputation for being, you know, reliable and consistent and professional. And so when every year coming out of schools all over the place, there are just so many hundreds of really capable players, and a very small number of them will be ultimately successful in their careers. So when an emerging player is trying to, you know, break in, for want of a better expression, the assumption is that you are great at what you do. And then whether you are able to start working in that comes down to all the other stuff, like, is your shirt clean? Do you drive a car? You know, are you able to deal with people professionally on a gig without being kind of a pain? Are you, just all of that kind of stuff. Are you unpredictable? Are you irritating? Do you have bad personal hygiene?
So, it's good. I'm thinking it's a lot like people who say, if you want to play sports, you have to put in your 10,000 hours on the one hand. Like, sure, you're good, but you need to, as I like to say, eat shit before you can eat caviar, right? But then on the other hand, there's this sort of, you have to be professional. And, you know, you just said you had to deal with people. Were there any experiences where you probably... And I love this question. It's sort of the sweetest mistake question. Were there any instances where you still kick yourself, or man, if I had only been a little bit less of a prick, you know, or I wish I had handled that differently. Were there any instances like that where you look back and you think, well, I learned something from that, even though I didn't handle it the best way?
Yeah. Actually, when I was just coming out of college, in my last year in college, I had previously kind of fallen out with my jazz band director in college, who's actually went to school in Illinois. A couple of guys in town know him. And it wasn't really a thing, but because I was starting to work professionally quite a lot, I had to miss these rehearsals, and And eventually, he fired me from the college band. And I wasn't a jazz major in college. I was a classical performance major, so I didn't need to be in it. But, he told me that I couldn't play the band anymore. So, but then they had a big concert at the end of the year, and I can't remember exactly how it happened, but somebody dropped out or somebody got sick, and he asked me to come back and play this concert, and I did, and I was really sick and tired and, frazzled. And this in the rehearsal, he there was a lot of stress flying around, and I lost my temper, and I left, and it was a really bad scene. And I remember I left, and I went across the street to get a drink, because you can do that in England. And after the rehearsal finished, it ran over, the other guys and Dan came over, and I'm like, wow, you won't believe what just happened after you left. He looked at the clock and said, well, it's after 9 o'clock, school's out, I can say this, So for, on the one hand, I absolutely regret, losing my cool, especially as a student, one of my professors, now I'm on the other side of that, But it's kind of funny, because, it got me a lot of credit amongst my students, a lot of whom would have really liked to have done the same thing.
So the lesson here is keep your mouth shut to your professor, but, maybe I'm missing the lesson.
If it had been a professional situation,
mm-hmm.
I'd have been fired, potentially a very bad thing for my career, because, you can't lose your cool like that.
Yeah.
It's not okay to be that way. So if it had been a professional situation, with a band leader, maybe a couple of people in the band would have been happy I'd done it, but then, suddenly you have a reputation, this guy did this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
And, your reputation is everything. It's a freelance musician,
yeah.
Freelance anything. So the lesson was, I need to manage that side of my behavior. Even when you're tired, even when you're stressed, and you're sick, you still have to be completely professional.
Yeah.
And, in the following years when I was doing a lot of touring and, would often be playing, traveling for 3 or 4 hours every day and early flights and late nights, all the rest of it, with 7 guys in a little van for weeks on end. Just being able to keep cool is really
mm-hmm.
important, because as a musician, you're often in very stressful situations. So,
on top of that is also the sort of recognizing that your instructors are more than just your teachers for this time being, because like you're talking about, your reputation precedes you, and you think, oh, well, as soon as I get out of here, my life starts. But you don't realize, in addition to the fact that you need these references, people talk to one another. And guaranteed, if you plan on working in the same city where you go to school, or even within the same networks, that those professors are in conversation with other artists, musicians, whatever your genre, I think it definitely pays to be a kiss ass.
Well, I mean, I don't think I'd say that, because
I'm exaggerating.
Yeah, because that's kind of a drag as well.
Yeah.
If people are being insincere, but yeah, you don't want to be a dick.
Right.
That's, people don't want to deal with people who are dicks.
Right.
So yeah, and you're absolutely right that as a professional, that your teachers, if you're in the creative arts, are almost certainly, you hope that they will be your peers, or you will be their peers. So,
mm-hmm.
Your first introductions come from your fellow students and people you meet, but also from your teachers too. But I also think, now I'm on the other side of that, now that I'm the professor, I think about that. I had a situation with a student recently where he lost his cool, under a lot of stress, and whereas I would have been well within my right as his professor to really come down hard on him, I mean, I still came down on him, but I'm familiar with what he was going through,
mm-hmm.
and I think as a teacher, you have to make, to an extent, this environment safe.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay if you screw up here. Like, that's part of why you're here, is to figure out where the boundaries are. And
as long as you recognize, though, that you did make a mistake, and
sure.
This is a recognition, you made a mistake, but this is a learning environment.
Exactly.
But, you know, we are here sitting at University of Illinois, Chicago, and I always talk about this kind of wearing multiple hats and how we negotiate being creative professionals and also earning a living. And I'm pretty sure that you didn't just fall into a teaching job right out of play, where I assume you were traveling. How, you know, did you personally negotiate before you had the teaching job being creative with gigging or finding a way to not just support yourself, but actually earn like a respectful income?
Yeah, actually, I really did just kind of fall into it.
Yeah?
Teaching, yeah. Yeah, I mean, so when I was out of school and I was still living in England, you know, I didn't teach at all. I never taught before I moved to Chicago. Yeah, the earning a living versus being creative versus teaching. I mean, I think of it all as one continuum, you know. I mean, obviously, in different places I'm doing different things, but like yesterday, Monday, I got up, I came here, I taught a trombone lesson, I got in my car, I drove across town, I played a recording session for like a gambling machine company, you know, and then I came back over here and I worked with my jazz ensemble, and then I went home and then I went out and played a jazz gig, you know, which, and that's, like, every day isn't like that, but that's almost like a perfect day for me, because when I'm teaching, I'm dealing with the craft and the artistry. Like, I might be teaching my student, like, how to play the instrument much, much better, which is going to be at the basis of anything he does as an artist, but also at the basis of his ability to make a living as an employable musician, you know. And those things cross over in all sorts of places, but they also can be two very separate things. And then I went and did something that was entirely about, like, just operating as a instrumentalist at a high level, you know, getting a piece of music recorded in less than an hour.
So how did you, I'm just going to stop you right there, how did you get that gig? Just as far as, you know, our audience, right, are emerging professionals, and I want to just kind of pick your brain in terms of how that came to be.
The recording session?
Yeah, for the gambling company?
Yeah, for WMS Gaming. I wonder if, like, it's all very secretive because they made the machines in Vegas, you know. Well, you know, they have in-house music production. So, you know, if you're playing a pinball machine or a gambling machine, there's music a lot of the time. And they really invest highly in the gambling stuff on the production end because they want people to stay there and spend money, I assume. So they often have a recording studio in-house. And when they have the budget, they use live musicians. So, you know, the guys who write for those games are often, you know, are also, of course, musicians. And so, like, pretty much all of my work ever, it's entirely based on word of mouth and reputation. Like, literally, I played an audition to get into college, and then I played an audition for the Disney band, and I don't know if I've played an audition since. I may have, like, but if I have, I've played, like, one or two.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the work that I do, it's all based on on the connections that you make.
Yeah, the relationships. And I think that's an important thing. Like, I always stress among my peers that, you know, just because you have a relationship with someone, if the only time that you call them is when you need something, then they're going to be less likely to think of you. But to have interactions that are not just need-based, I think is really important, not just for the sake of upkeep, but to make those relationships, I think, more deep and meaningful, and then people continue to have you on their mind as well.
Well, and like you need your cohort in a way. Like if I have an undergraduate student, it's unlikely that when they graduate at 22 that I will be giving them work. You know, because the level at which they're operating and the level of work, the entry level of work for them, you know, that's not work that I'm doing. They need to make a cohort with the people who are their
age
and just above them, right? So think of the whole thing as like a big ladder. You know, when you get out of school, you need to be have relationships with the people who are going to throw you the kind of work that you are realistically going to be doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, occasionally, I've had occasional students who, you know, when they're, even if they're in school, you know, there's work I'm throwing at them because they're, you know, you get students like that sometimes.
Yeah, they're operating at that level. If you could kind of talk to your younger self back in the day, what would you have said to your young self?
That's an interesting one. Because, I mean, I did a lot of stupid stuff when I was younger, you know. I would say, you know, from my, actually, and it's kind of related, from my experiences, look at a lot of my students, I would say, don't be so serious about everything.
Mm.
You know, when I was in school, and it's, you know, it's 20 years ago or whatever, it's a different time, and I was in school in a place where you didn't have to take on huge amounts of debt to go. Me and my peers, we were thinking like, oh yeah, how am I going to pay, you know, the rent this month, and how am I going to buy food, and I hope something comes up. But we, you know, a lot of my students said, you know, they come in to audition and they're 17 and 18 years old, and they're like, well, you know, how am I going to, what kind of career am I going to have? What kind of money am I going to make when I graduate? It's like, well, I don't know. Neither do you. It will depend on how hard you work and how lucky you are and all the rest of it. But you'll be 22. Don't worry about it. Like, so many, how many people do you know in their 40s and 50s who are still doing the career that they thought they were going to do? When you go to school, study something you're passionate about, even if it's accounting. Because you're becoming an inquisitive, critical thinker and learner and doing something that you care about. You know, like, just if music or the arts are what caused you, go and do it. It's a great way to spend 4 years. And then if it doesn't work out, well, you still have a college degree, you can go and get a job. And if you need to go and retrain in something else, lots of people need to retrain and do something else. So don't focus on when you're a freshman in college, like, oh, where am I going to be when I'm 35? When I was a freshman in college, I thought I was going to be playing in a symphony orchestra and I would never leave London. And here I am, I'm a professor of jazz studies in Chicago.
I've been recently subscribing to the philosophy of, you know, don't wait for the punchline, enjoy the joke. So, yeah, I like that too. So, you know, I think that that really applies in the sense that, you know, you're going to school, but you're not just going to school to get a degree, you know, because if you spend 4 years waiting for that degree and just getting through in order to get through, then you're going to miss the joke. I also, you know, in spirit of supporting sort of what you do as an artist and also your connectivity to Chicago, because all the artists I feature here are Chicago-based.
Sure.
Maybe you can tell our audience where they can see you.
Sure. Well, for the next 12 weeks, if they can come and see me in the pit of the Book of Mormon, because that's what I'll be doing Tuesday through Sunday most of the time. But also I have a big band that I co-lead with a friend of mine, Ken Partika, called the New Standard Jazz Orchestra. We're playing once a month at the Jazz Showcase downtown Chicago. You can look at my website. I remember to update it about every 2 or 3 months.
Well, you know what I'm going to do on this website? I'll make sure to have the links to your website and any upcoming features so that folks who want to hear you can come and stop by.
Sure.
So thank you so much for joining me today. And
stay tuned for next month, episode 24.